Attention on driving. The wall of falling snow in front of her made it hard to see the directional signs indicating curves and switchbacks and intersecting roads until she was on top of them, but she had driven this way often enough recently to know when to slow down. She peered through the windshield, looking for Franklin's taillights, seeing only a moving curtain of white. She watched for the junctions, seeing no tracks at the road that went to the closed BLM Ranger Station or to the Sandstone Bluffs entrance a few miles farther south. She continued toward La Ventana Natural Arch, looking for Franklin's truck beside the road. The snow made it harder to see if another vehicle had come this way, or if she was driving through a layer that was undisturbed. Franklin hadn't had that much of a head start. If he were driving much faster than she would have seen his truck, or its tracks, in a skid off the highway. She looked at the clock on the dashboard and decided she'd give the road another 10 minutes, unless she got to the arch parking area first. If she didn't spot him there or before, she would admit that she'd made the wrong call and he was on the road to San Rafael, the highway on the west side of the Badlands. In that case, he had too much of a head start for her to find him, and she'd quit worrying and head home. The snow was falling even more heavily now, sparkling white. Headlights approached from the south, hopefully in the opposite lane. The distance between them closed. It was a big truck pulling a trailer, moving cautiously through the storm and staying in its own lane. She pulled into the Ventana parking lot to turn around, finding no tracks, only beautiful unbroken snow. On another night, if the moon were shining and the blizzard had ended, she would have climbed out to see the sandstone arch covered with snow. She turned the unit around to head back toward Grant's, disappointment weighing on her. Franklin must have gone the other way. Maybe he'd done the smart thing and gone home to bed. When her phone buzzed and she saw it was Mama, she stayed in the parking lot, put the unit in park, and took the call.
"Daughter, I'm waiting for you to take me to the grocery store."
Bernie sucked in her breath. She knew she had told Mama she couldn't help her tonight.
"Oh, I'm sorry. I've had some crises at work. Those things soaked up my time, and I forgot to call you."
She didn't get into the specifics of Franklin's despondency or Larry's accident.
"We will go as soon as I can. Did you have something for dinner, Mama?"
"I don't know."
"Are you hungry?"
"No. Mrs. Darkwater came over, and we watched that show on TV, you know, where people tried to guess words and spin the big wheel. She brought some applesauce, and we had that, too, for dessert. It was good, but not as good as those brownies I like."
Mrs. Darkwater, Mama's closest neighbor, had become a friend to her and an auntie for Bernie. Mama usually didn't like talking on the phone, but tonight was different. Bernie turned up the heater a notch, put the phone on speaker, and shifted into drive. Mama chatted on, telling her about Mrs. Darkwater's grandson and how he was making a volcano for his science project. Then she talked again about her weaving student and her slow but steady progress. Bernie drove faster now, pushing the unit against the storm, convinced that Franklin had taken a different route. Mama finished bragging on her student and told Bernie again about the applesauce and the TV show.
"Then, did you talk to your sister?"
"Yes, her program is over on Friday. A few more days, that's all, and then she'll be home."
"I miss her."
Mama paused.
"You sound far away. Where are you?"
"I put you on the speakerphone, Mama. That's why I sound different. I'm out by Grant's, but I'm heading back to Shiprock now."
"That is a long drive, daughter. Be careful. I saw on TV that a storm is coming. I think it is good that we did not go shopping tonight. Will your husband be home soon?"
"I hope so."
Mama ended the call. Bernie felt a pang of anxiety about the conversation, but she filed it away to consider later. The snow continued with a vengeance. New Mexico needed the moisture, a beautiful gift, but she wished it had waited until she could snuggle warmly in bed. She turned her wipers on to high and slowed down a little more. Her earlier tire tracks had disappeared along with the center line. She used the reflectors along the side of the road to navigate. Keeping the interstate highway open during a storm took precedence, so she hoped that a plow and sand truck had already been out to scrape the asphalt. Less traveled roads, like the one she was on now, were a lower priority. On the Navajo Nation, most roads were unpaved, and snow removal usually consisted of neighbors with plows on their trucks, or, more often, the emergence of the sun and warmer days. That created another problem. Every year she rescued people whose vehicles had gotten stuck in cold, deep mud. Except for the truck and trailer she'd encountered, no vehicle had passed her in either direction. Even though she was almost sure Franklin had taken the other road, the one she wasn't on, she watched for a vehicle parked off the road. She slowed down as she reached the turnoff for the Okomazuni trailhead, remembering that this was where the trailer had passed her. If Franklin had parked here, she would have missed him. She looked closely as she drove past. Did she see a vehicle? Or was it only a reflection from the snow? She tapped the brakes, feeling the unit slide before the tires found traction. She backed up until her headlights caught the entrance road. A set of tracks was faintly visible in the snow. Someone had turned here. She drove in. Her headlights reflected off a glint of glass and chrome. A snow-covered truck. Franklin had parked his dark vehicle behind a cluster of pinyon trees at the spot closest to the trailhead and farthest from the highway. She pulled in next to it. The hood of the truck was still warm, and the driver's door was locked. Bernie shined her flashlight inside. Franklin wasn't there, but the winter jacket he had been wearing earlier was on the seat. His hat and gloves were on the floor. She studied the snow with her flashlight until she found the smooth prints of his cowboy boot soles, then called in the situation to local law enforcement, put the space blanket from her trunk in her backpack, and pulled on her knit cap and her gloves, all the while envisioning Franklin out in the blizzard, cold but safe. The trail, a single track in the dirt, was marked by rock cairns. It would have been a challenge to follow in any circumstances. Now, about 6 inches of snow had accumulated, and even with her boots, the flat stretch at the beginning held some challenge. Using her flashlight to hunt for Franklin's footprints and for obstacles now buried beneath the relentless snow, she followed his faint tracks, thankful that he stayed on what must be the narrow path of the trail. She remembered hiking this way once with Chi in the spring, and how the trail started out heading toward the lava, then made a surprising turn to the right, and edged along the flow before climbing through the rugged black rock. That had been several years before, and in the daylight, but she hoped the route had wedged itself in her memory, to be accessed if needed. The snow had begun to settle in little drifts against the base of rocks and trees. After about 10 minutes of walking, she called to Franklin. There was no response from the darkness. Then she saw a place where someone, probably Franklin, had slipped. The snowflakes melted against Bernie's cheeks, tickled her eyelashes. Her hands and toes were cold, and the wind pushed the frigid air through her jacket. She nearly tripped over a log made invisible by the snow, and as she waited to catch her breath, she noticed another disruption in the snow's surface. Franklin had fallen here. She walked faster, hoping that if he collapsed somewhere, she could find him in the blizzard. The dark night and the intensity of the snowfall were disorienting, conditions that made it easy to get lost in a dangerous place. She was glad she'd left the emergency lights flashing on her unit, a beacon to guide her back. Now, when she scanned the snow for Franklin's boot prints, she couldn't see them, only the way the snow had drifted over the trail. She walked on. Still nothing.
Franklin? Franklin! It's Bernie! Are you out here?
She continued, using the snow-covered rock piles as guides, but his prints didn't reappear. Either the blizzard had buried them, or he had turned off the trail somewhere and she'd missed the place. She called again, listened. The wind stopped, and her chilled bones rejoiced, but the only thing she heard was silence. She called again, listened to the hush of the flakes landing on the pinyon needles, sage, and lava rock. Her face was numb now, and her toes barely responded when she tried to wiggle them. She couldn't risk becoming another job for the search team. Saying a silent prayer for Franklin, she turned back. She'd pay more attention to the sides of the trail now, for places he could have headed off into the lava. She had walked only a few minutes when she noticed faint depressions in the snow away from the trail to the west. An animal? Maybe. She looked at the prints more closely, and then for landmarks to help her find the spot to connect back to the parking lot trail, spotting a lone snow-covered tree that leaned to the right. Not much, but it would have to do. She remembered how he'd been dressed at the restaurant, only a long-sleeved denim shirt and jeans under the jacket she'd spotted in his truck. If she felt chilled now, as warmly dressed as she was, he must be close to frozen. She called again as she set out, stepping in the indents that might be his tracks. Adrenaline energized her, and she forgot her cold feet and hands, focusing closely on the rapidly disappearing path she hoped Franklin had made. The deepening snow crept over the top of her hiking boots and sifted in to melt against her socks. At first, it sounded like an animal, maybe a rabbit in distress or a fox. The sound wasn't exactly anything she'd heard before. It stirred ancestral memories of shape-shifting creatures that roamed the earth at night, causing trouble. She stopped, her heart racing. It came again, and this time it sounded human.
"Franklin!"
She heard the sound a third time, and then something heartbreaking, muffled by the snow. It could have been her own name. 19. Bernie nearly stumbled over him, sprawled in the snow-covered lava, his arms folded over his chest. "You're not dying tonight," she told him. "You're coming with me." She supported Franklin to a sitting position, and then slowly to standing, the emergency blanket from her pack wrapped around his shoulders. His soaked clothing had already started to stiffen. It wouldn't have been long before hypothermia set in. She put her warm hat over his icy ears and assisted him on the cold, slick walk to her unit. The challenge and the stress helped her forget about her numb toes and frozen hands. When they finally reached the parking area, she asked Franklin about the keys to his truck so she could unlock the vehicle and extract his coat, hat, and gloves. He stared at her without responding. She felt his pockets but didn't find the keys. She opened the trunk to get the extra blankets and energy bars she kept in case of emergencies, pushing aside the cardboard box the ranger had entrusted to her. That encounter seemed like weeks ago, not just that afternoon. After helping Franklin in, Bernie started the engine and waited what seemed like forever for the orange needle to float up to the sea and then a touch beyond it. Finally, she cranked up the heat to maximum as Franklin shivered in the seat next to her. "Sit on your hands to help warm them up," she said. His face was ashen, but a warmer shade of gray than when she had discovered him, partly covered in snow with the big flakes melting on the bare skin of his face and neck.
"I wanted to die there."
The bone-deep cold made his teeth chatter.
But when I heard you calling, I had to answer.
When the unit grew warmer, she persuaded him to remove his soaked shirt and gave him one of the soft, warm blankets for his bare shoulders. She poured some lukewarm coffee from her thermos into a cup and held it while he drank so his shaking hands wouldn't spill it.
"That tastes terrible,"
she laughed.
"Did your grandmother forget to teach you any manners?"
"My Shimasana is gone. Dom must be dead, too."
Everything she could think of saying in response sounded cliched. She changed the subject.
"Do you know where the keys are to your truck?"
"I dropped them in the snow. I left my coat in the car so it would be dry for Dom if I found him. My hat and gloves, too. I thought he would need."
Franklin left the thought suspended in the winter air, and they sat with the pain, raw and deep. After a while, she offered him an energy bar.
Eat this. You could use the calories. Then try to relax. We need to go before the roads get any worse. Would you like me to take you to the hospital?
No, I'll be fine. I want to go home. You're cold too, aren't you? Here, take your hat back.
I'm okay. I'll drive. You rest. You don't need to talk. Think of a warm, safe place.
Franklin wrapped the blanket more tightly around his bare shoulders.
I always feel safe with Dom. He's my anchor, you know. Strong, smart, kind. And now...
Bernie heard a choked sob.
Franklin, you weren't meant to die out there. That's the reason I found you.
She stopped talking to give driving her total focus. In the long minutes she had spent finding Franklin and getting him to her unit, New Mexico 117 had accumulated enough snow to force her to slow down even more drastically. The blizzard made each curve a driving test, and the gusty wind created periodic whiteouts. She could see only as far as the place ahead where her headlights penetrated the wall of falling snow. From the corner of her eye, she watched Franklin tug the blanket around himself.
If I'm cold sitting in this car with the heat on and wearing your hat and everything, imagine how Dom must feel. I hope he's dead. That's better than suffering.
He let out a low sob.
No, no, I don't mean that.
Shh. Rest.
She drove with both hands on the wheel, using the reflectors along the roadside to make sure her unit stayed on the pavement, headed in the right direction. After what seemed like forever, she came to the overpass that led to the interstate. She relaxed a tiny bit when she saw that the highway department had not erected the road-closed barriers. Not yet. She expected the bridge to be slick, and it was. She stayed in the center and then eased onto the four-lane highway heading west to Grants. Her passenger sat up straight, staring unblinkingly ahead, watching the storm and the trucks that crept along. She appreciated his silence. She heard the radio squawk, and Franklin flinched.
Manuelito, where are you?
It was the rookie, Officer Wilson Sam. He chuckled when she told him.
No kidding. The interstate is closed west of Grants because of the storm. A truck overturned and it's blocking both lanes. You won't make it back tonight.
I guess not. Is the captain there?
No, he told me to check with you before he went home, but I just got around to it. How bad is it out there?
It's snowing hard. The wind was fierce earlier, but it's calmer now. Only occasional gusts.
She didn't think of weather as good or bad. Storms were an expected component of winter at 6,000 feet on the Colorado Plateau, and blizzards came with the territory. Wind, slush, mud, drought, rain. It all had a purpose in the way the holy people had designed Dineta, the Navajo universe.
No snow here in Shiprock yet. Any news on the lost guy? You know that sighting of somebody who might have been your man Cruz? Turned out he was somebody else.
They suspended the search because of the weather. A friend of Mr. Cruz was out searching tonight and ran into some trouble. He's in the unit with me now.
She talked on, not offering the rookie the opportunity to say anything critical of Franklin or Cruz or the searchers.
Tell the captain I'll be back as soon as the highway reopens. I'll check in when I leave Grants.
I'll let him know. The rookie laughed. I don't know what you did to attract Counselor Walker's attention, but she acts like you're her new best friend. She called for you several times and wouldn't leave a message and doesn't want to talk to me or anybody except you and the captain.
That's interesting. Both the captain and Sandra knew her cell number and used cautious judgment in deciding who to release it to. Obviously, Counselor Walker's behavior had not met their high standards. Anything else I should know?
The new FBI came by. She looks like a California surfer girl wearing a business suit. She was asking about that car bomb that killed that dude at the high school, so I filled her in. She was happy to have the information.
Bernie remembered, with residual annoyance, the way the rookie had second-guessed her commands that night when the two of them had to handle crowd control and protect the crime scene until backup arrived. She turned the heater down a notch. It felt as warm in the car as in Merrily's greenhouse.
"And Largo asked me to look over that budget stuff you picked up from Cooper, remember that?"
He didn't wait for her to respond.
"He looked on your desk, in the vertical files, everywhere he could think of, but it was nowhere, and he was ticked off. So I guess that job boomerangs back to you."
She knew exactly where the files were. In her trunk. She hadn't had time to leave them at the office, and Largo should have remembered that. "Is that it?"
"Good luck finding a room out there. I heard the hotels and grants are full and they're putting people up at the high school gym until the interstate reopens. Lucky you're short. You can sleep in the unit."
She exhaled, breathing out her irritation. Sandra, Officer Big Man, even Captain Largo would have offered to make some calls to find her a motel room at the discounted law enforcement rate. The rookie reminded her of the annoying little brother she was glad she never had. She shook her head once to get rid of the frustration and focused on driving. Truckers heading west to Gallup, Flagstaff, Kingman, and beyond took I-40 through New Mexico's red rocks and lava as their preferred route. Tonight, the big trucks moved at a glacial pace toward the exits. Passenger vehicles, buses, pickups pulling horse trailers, and drivers who seemed to have never encountered snow before added to the confusion. Her unit's wipers handled the test fairly well, although ice had begun to accumulate on the blade on the passenger side. She leaned toward the windshield for a better view as she passed a car on the shoulder with its emergency flashers on, the driver scraping her windshield and thumping the wiper blades against the glass to clear the ice. Bernie was concentrating so hard on the other drivers, the weather, and the challenges of the road, that Franklin's voice startled her.
"I'm sorry for all the trouble. I didn't expect you to follow me. I mean, you really don't even know me. You could have gotten hurt out there in the lava."
"I was concerned about you because of the way you rushed out of the restaurant."
"You know, Dom did the same to me. We had an argument right before he left on the Wings and Roots trip. I said some things I shouldn't have, but he was working himself to death. I told him he should only focus on photography. That was what he loved, and work with kids as a volunteer or something."
"And what did he say?"
"Nothing. He just stormed away from the house without a goodbye."
Franklin looked out the window at the snow.
"Earlier he said his photography had led to problems, and he wished I hadn't even brought it up."
"What problems?"
"I don't know."
Franklin sighed.
"I was so angry I didn't even ask."
"The only pictures of his I've seen are of petroglyphs. Does he do other things?"
"Oh, yes. All kinds of photos. Landscapes intrigue him the most."
"I'd like to see them sometime. But for now, could you do me a favor?"
"If I can."
"My phone is in my backpack on the floor behind you. Can you make a call for me?" Franklin pulled the backpack into the front seat. "It's in the side pocket." She saw the flash of light as the phone came on.
"All set. Now what?"
"Go to contacts and you'll see Chi." He scrolled through the list.
"Got him."
"He's my husband. He knows I'm working out here and he always watches the news and the weather reports." She stopped, her attention caught by the steady beat of taillights on emergency flash reflected in the snow on the shoulder, where a small sedan sat beside the interstate at an odd angle. She turned on her own light bar and pulled in behind it. "I'll be right back." Franklin lifted her jacket off his lap.
"You'll need this."
His fingers felt cool but not ice cold as he handed it to her.
"Would you like your cap now?"
"You keep it." She zipped up her jacket and climbed out into the night. She stretched her back a moment before she put on gloves, grabbed her flashlight, and closed the unit's door. It felt good to be standing. The frigid air sharpened her brain. The snow hid the ice on the road, and she nearly lost her balance as she hurried to the stranded car. Snow covered the windows, enough to tell her it had been parked for a while.
She knocked on the driver's side and yelled, "Anyone in there? You okay?"
No answer. She brushed off the snow and shone the light into the little sedan. The car was empty. She said a little prayer of gratitude as she cautiously made her way back to the unit. Fastening her seatbelt, she noticed that Franklin had set her phone down on the car seat and had his own up to his ear.
"Cold and embarrassed, but I'm here."
A pause, and then,
"I'm with Officer Manuelito, you know, the Navajo cop."
He stopped to listen.
"I'll ask her."
He put the phone in his lap.
"Marilee wants us to come by. She says the storm is supposed to keep up until after midnight. She's inviting us to stay with her."
"Put your phone on speaker so I can talk to her." He pushed on the screen and then held it closer to her mouth.
"Marilee, tell me about the pot."
The voice on the phone sounded far away.
"Bernie, you two should sleep at my house tonight. All the motels are full because of the interstate being closed, and Franklin's road will be a disaster. And you can drop off the box."
"Tell me about the pot and your connection to Hoffman."
Bernie put more steel into the request. The phone was silent for a moment.
"I asked him to sell it on consignment for me, but then I changed my mind. He was on his way to return it to me when you..."
Static interrupted her.
"Him."
"Marilee?"
Bernie waited for a response until the distinctive fadeaway chimes came on to mark a lost signal. She pushed the phone back toward Franklin. He squirmed to slip it back in his pants pocket.
"If the weather was better, you could stay at my place tonight. But it's way out Cholla Road, and with all this snow, we'd never make it. Marilee has a lot of room."
"I'll drop you off there. I need to give her the pot, and there are some other things I need to talk to her about."
She drove through the curtain of snow, inching along with visibility no farther than the end of her headlights. Franklin adjusted the heater vents.
"Do you still want me to call your husband?"
"No. By now he would have made some calls, and he'll know how bad the roads are. I'll catch him later."
Or, she thought, he'd gone to bed blissfully unaware of the blizzard. Bernie followed a line of trucks to ease her unit off the interstate at the next exit and took Franklin's directions to Marilee's house, the unit sliding and slipping. Maybe luck would be with her, Bernie thought, and the interstate would reopen by the time she had talked to Marilee about the pot and the website with Cruz's photo. She didn't mind driving in the snow, but she was tired.
"Did you and Cruz visit Marilee often?"
"No, not at all. The two of them are friendly, but not cordial. Dom is thoughtful, analytical. Marilee jumps in with both feet and then tries to figure out what's next. I think not knowing what their clans are or why they were put up for adoption has left some, you know, issues for both of them."
"How did you meet?"
"I met Domingo through his sister. I'd done some carpentry work for her back before her husband died. Custom cabinet she'd seen in a magazine. She introduced me to Dom. She asked her brother to come by and give her some ideas for the kitchen while I was there. And, well, one thing led to another." She heard the smile in his voice. "Marilee is a powerful woman. I always teased Dom that she got the energy and the good looks, and he got the brains and the big heart."
The streets of Grants were deserted. Families would be hunkering down in the face of the ongoing storm, parents watching the news, wondering if schools would be closed the next day. It took Bernie longer to reach Marilee's house than she'd expected. This time, even from a distance, she could see warm light shining from the windows.
"Watch it!"
Franklin yelled at the same time she saw the big coyote lope directly in front of the unit. She just tapped the brakes, but even the small change in momentum put the unit into a skid. She tried to correct, to steer and cajole it back to the street, but conditions worked against her. The snow was too deep and the angle too sharp. The car slid off the road at the edge of Marilee's driveway and skidded down a short embankment. The coyote stopped, watched, and then disappeared into the blizzard. After a few futile tries, Bernie realized that the vehicle couldn't extricate itself and radioed for help. The dispatcher sympathized and told her what she already knew. All available tow trucks and wreckers were in use, but they'd get to her as soon as they could. She gave Bernie the direct phone number of the service they used. Franklin, unlike many men she knew, sat quietly while she struggled to get the unit unstuck, only speaking after she'd radioed in her problem.
"Well, I guess you'll have to leave the police car here for now."
He pushed the blanket from his bare shoulders and reached for his shirt.
"I'm glad we made it this far. Let's go."
"Wait, put that back on. You don't have a coat, remember? And your shirt will still be soaked."
"I feel like a fool in this thing."
But he kept the blanket. They walked past the Range Rover in the driveway, crowned with at least 6 inches of sparkling snow. Before Bernie could ring the bell, Merrily opened the front door.
"Michael Franklin, you could be a refugee or homeless. What in the world happened to you?"
"Oh, I went for a hike in the snow, and we just slid off the road because of the blizzard, but I'm fine. Thanks to Bernie here."
"Come on in, you two. Warm up. Would you like tea, soup, coffee, something hot?"
"Sure, whatever. Some of everything."
Franklin pulled the blanket around him.
"I'm chilled to the soul."
"Thanks," Bernie said. "I have some questions for you."
"I know you do. Warm up a bit. It's brutal out there. Is your car damaged?"
"No, but I had to call for a tow."
Franklin followed merrily down the hall to the kitchen, leaving sloshy footprints. Bernie knocked the snow off her boots on the welcome mat, took off her coat and gloves, and put them on a bench by the front door. The petroglyph picture in the entryway was gone now. In its place, Merrily had hung a large color photograph of magpies, their wings glowing blue-black and their ebony heads shiny in the sunlight. One of the birds sat on a wire fence, and the others looked as though they had just taken flight. The hogback formation near Farmington towered in the background. As Bernie entered the kitchen, Merrily motioned her to a seat at the counter next to Franklin. She put a red tea kettle on her black stovetop and turned on the heat beneath it, took a plate with cheese and grapes out of the refrigerator, and found some napkins in a drawer. Then she returned and stood in front of Bernie.
"Do you want to talk now or warm up and relax a little first? You both look like you've had a long day."
Franklin reached for a grape.
"I don't want to think about anything right now."
Bernie looked down. Residual snow from her hiking boots had fallen onto Merrily's sparkling floor and begun to melt.
"Let's talk now. I'd like to get business out of the way, so if the tow truck comes, I can head back to Shiprock when the roads open. By the way, what happened to Dom's photo that you had in the entrance hall?"
"Oh, I took it down. I took them all down. I like to rotate the art. These that replace them are his work, too."
"I saw one of your brother's photos on an Indian antiquities website. Tell me..."
Merrily picked up the thread.
"Oh, yeah, that was a failed experiment."
Bernie shifted a little on the stool.
"There's a Navajo Nation Council member who thinks something fishy is going on with the Wings and Roots funding. Dom is her main suspect because he works as the organization's fundraiser. She isn't convinced his getting lost before he was scheduled to become the program director is coincidence."
"That's crazy talk."
Merrily turned to Franklin.
"Right?"
Franklin nodded.
"Dom would never do anything to hurt the program. He put some of his savings in to keep it going."
"The board was looking forward to having him as the director."
Merrily sounded angry.
"I couldn't have voted on his appointment, of course, because of the nepotism rules, but I know all my colleagues thought he would do a fine job. That counselor is flat wrong. Dom would never..."
The shrill whistle of the tea kettle interrupted her, and she turned to the stove. When she spoke again, she'd regained her composure.
"I've got tea, hot chocolate, instant coffee, and decaf?"
She phrased it like a question.
"I'll have some hot chocolate."
Franklin shifted on the stool.
"Dom loves the program. He likes working with kids, but he was ready for a change.
Being director would be easier in some ways. He and Cooper get along great, and she told him she'd help with the transition.
Bernie, how about you? A cup of tea?
Tea? She shivered at the thought.
Oh, no, thanks. Only some water for now.
Merrily filled a glass and gave the water to Bernie. She took a swallow before she spoke.
I have another question for you. How much progress had you and Dom made on that book of his photographs?
I'm exploring it, but as fine a photographer as he is, he's an unknown. We created a prototype, and I've been showing it to publishers, but no luck. I would have to pay for the book myself. That's expensive. I'm still looking into options, but I need money to do it.
Franklin glanced up, his voice tinged with surprise.
Dom thought the book was still in the works. That's why he kept knocking himself out, going to the Malpais to get more shots, better photos, different lighting, all that. When were you going to tell him about the money?
Merrily's face clouded. I kept thinking I could figure out a way to write a grant or something. I hadn't told him about the problem yet because I knew it would be hard for him to swallow. He's got enough on his mind with the Wings and Roots finances.
Bernie broke in.
So, were you selling native artifacts with fake provenances to help finance the book and to keep Wings and Roots afloat?
Merrily shook her head, her dark hair swinging from side to side. No, of course not. All I sold, or tried to sell, through my online art business were Dom's photos. Why did you even ask me that?
I'm trying to make sense of Dom's disappearance.
Merrily sighed. I can't understand it. Are you having any luck?
Well, because he's so familiar with the area, I'm thinking he may have disappeared on purpose because of something questionable he got involved with. Or he did something or knew something that made someone angry enough to hurt him.
But even as she said that, Bernie dismissed the second option. If someone wanted Cruz dead, there were many easier places to kill him.
Merrily went to the sink, and they sat in silence while she cleaned up, or perhaps collected her thoughts. The little containers that had been on the counter when Bernie first visited were missing.
What happened to the herbs? She asked.
I gave them to Mayfair. She wanted them for some recipes.
They came from your greenhouse, right? I looked for you in there when I stopped by this afternoon to drop off the pot. I saw those white angel trumpets. Impressive. Amazing to see them blooming this time of year.
I've encouraged them. Merrily wiped a damp spot off the countertop with a napkin. I found the card you left in the door. I must have been at the hospital with poor Larry. I've got some apricot trumpets and pink ones that are almost done blooming. Angel trumpets had been one of Bernie's favorite plants when she was a college student. In the dry, windy Southwest, the big, showy flowers survived best in botanic gardens or in the hands of devoted fans with greenhouses.
The flowers remind me a little of Datura, Franklin said.
I guess you could call them clan sisters.
Bernie readjusted herself on the seat.
But Datura is hardier.
Merrily smiled. Most people aren't that interested in plants.
I think botany is fascinating. The variety, the adaptability, the beauty, the toughness of some plants and the fragility of others. From those great redwoods in California to the little mountain orchids we have in the Lucachucais. They are amazing.
Franklin held his mug of hot chocolate in both hands.
Ladies, I'm like most people. I'll eat my veggies and smell the roses, but I don't care much about how they grow. As of now, I hardly care about anything except sleep. I'd like to go to bed.
Merrily switched her attention to Franklin as if suddenly remembering he sat there.
You look cold, Michael. What happened to your coat and your shirt?
The snow soaked my shirt, and it's out in Bernie's police car, stuck in a snowdrift. I left my coat back in the truck.
That's inconvenient. You're lucky you didn't get frostbite. Are your fingers and toes alive?
My fingers are stiff and cold and tingling a little. My toes ache.
Take off your shoes and I'll loan you some warm socks. You can sleep down the hall in the guest room.
Merrily smiled at Bernie.
You're welcome to the bed in the office.
No, I can't stay. I'll just wait for the tow truck.
Merrily shrugged.
Well then, make yourself at home. I'm going to tuck Michael in, close the blinds, and turn on some music for you in the living room. I'll be back, and then I'll show you the pot in the box and answer your questions. If you decide you want something hot, I keep the chocolate packets in that center drawer. There are tea bags and coffee pods in there, too, for the coffee maker. She indicated the fancy machine near the stove. Then she padded down the hall, Franklin following, the blanket dragging behind him like an oversized cape. Tuck him in sounded like what you say to a child, and poor Franklin looked the part. Bernie realized that, like Franklin, she was exhausted. She could hear music now, jazz with a lot of drums and timpani. The drums made her remember how her phone had been vibrating when she rushed out to find Franklin. But first she reconsidered Merrily's offer of coffee and found the pods in a drawer, selecting one called Goodnight Mocha Blend, Coffee and Chocolate. The bag of small dark seeds that had been in there, too, on top of some neatly folded blue dish towels, was gone. A sound like a bird call came from the back of the house. A few minutes later, the music out of the speakers in the living room grew louder. The coffee pod slid into the machine without effort. Bernie pressed the button, and the machine went to work with a soft whirring noise. After the coffee, she would go out to the frozen car to retrieve the box, the binder from Cooper at Wings and Roots, and the files Walker had left for review. She would bring in the damp shirt so Franklin would have it, and she could take back her emergency blanket. She would radio for a highway update, although judging from the flakes falling outside Merrily's window, the interstate must still be closed. Until the tow truck came, she was stuck in Grant's anyway. That bothered her, spending the night in Merrily's house, especially when Merrily might be a suspect in whatever shady business Hoffman had been dishing out. Wasn't proper law enforcement procedure. Too bad her top preference, sleeping in her own bed with Chi next to her, wasn't available. She went to the entryway and brought her phone and backpack into the kitchen. She fished the phone out of her backpack and called Chi. He sounded groggy.
Hi there. I thought you'd forgotten about me. Where are you? I hope you aren't stuck in the storm somewhere.
I'm safe in Grant's. Do you want to go back to sleep?
Not when I can talk to you. What's going on?
She filled him in on the road closure, her unit's misadventure, and other crucial details.
I feel uncomfortable staying here when I haven't figured out how Merrily is involved in all this.
What choice do you have? Relax until the tow truck comes. Just be glad that you found a warm place to wait, and you're not freezing in the blizzard. Your only other option is sleeping in your unit. Promise me you won't do that. Just sit on the couch in that house and wait for the tow and relax a little. If the truck gets there before morning, you can see if they have a spare bed at the women's prison.
I don't like this situation.
Chi chuckled.
Do you remember back when we first met, and you were so embarrassed because you slid off the road in the mud and I had to rescue you? You didn't like that much either.
Don't remind me. Let's talk about something else. What's new with you?
Well, did I tell you about George Curley? The poor guy took a landscaping job, and no one has seen him since.
20.
As she listened to Chi tell how George Curley's mother-in-law assumed the man had become a Navajo policeman, Bernie heard a noise, the crunch of tires in snow. A tow truck? Could she be that lucky? Lights from outside reflected steadily on the tile floor, indicating that the vehicle had stopped. She built a scenario, the driver wisely assessing the situation from the warmth of his cab, figuring the best angle to park his truck for the tow. She'd go out and talk to him as soon as Chief finished telling her about grumpy old Mrs. Vigil. But no, the roar of the engine, even with the muffling factor of the snow, wasn't deep enough for a tow truck. It was probably a neighbor inching home, wanting to see if Merrily was in trouble after noticing the police unit stuck near her driveway. Should she leave her cozy car to walk through the deep snow up to the door and check? Or would it be acceptable to mind her own business? The headlights flickered through the stained glass window in the front door, throwing colored confetti into the room as the driver decided. Then the lights faded. "Mind your own business," won the evening. She refocused on the conversation. "Is it snowing in Santa Fe?"
"No, but it's cold. I wish you were here to warm me up."
"Did you learn anything interesting at the training?"
"I did, and I'm looking forward to the Amber and Silver Alert session tomorrow. Largo wants me to fill everyone in at the next staff meeting. But you, my dear, might get a private sneak preview of some specialized maneuvers."
She missed him. There was nothing sexier than a handsome cop with a sense of humor. "I'd like that. Maybe we can work something out, Sergeant."
"That's what I'm hoping. See you soon, sweetheart."
The machine had filled the kitchen with the steamy aroma of coffee and chocolate. She took a tiny sip. Delicious. Hot. Creamy. Not too sweet. Yum. She liked the way the machine made each beverage fresh, and that people could choose what they wanted. She wondered if Largo would consider one of these for the office. Having grown up on Mama's stovetop version of campfire coffee, she wasn't a coffee snob, but this drink got a gold star. She savored each sweet mouthful, grateful that her day was nearly done, that she wasn't driving, wasn't talking anyone out of suicide by exposure, wasn't listening to the rookie's inane comments, wasn't giving her sister advice she never listened to, or listening to Mama's advice for her. For a few minutes, she could just be Bernie. She finished the mocha, walked to the entryway, grabbed her keys, zipped up her coat, and opened the door, checking to make sure she hadn't locked herself out. On Navajo, most families didn't lock their homes, but in the city it was a different situation. No tow truck in sight, but the snowfall had lessened. Larger flakes, as light as the air itself, danced silently on their descent to join their tribe on the ground. The sky was gray from the reflected light of the moon, the air crisp with a hint of moisture. If the snow stopped, maybe the highway department would reopen the road, the tow truck would come, and she could head on home tonight after getting some answers from Merrily. She would ask about road conditions when she radioed again for a tow truck. She felt better about the situation. Perhaps the mocha, and certainly the thought of Chi's special maneuvers, had revived her. She stopped fantasizing as she drew closer to her unit. The trunk lid was up, and snow had drifted inside. She jogged up to it, careful of her footing. The box Hoffman had entrusted to her was gone. She instinctively moved her hand to the gun in her holster, but the only sign of other humans was the soft light seeping through Merrily's window shades into the December evening. The thief must have been in the vehicle she'd heard earlier. Looking more closely at the trunk, she saw that the latch had been jimmied. She walked to the driver's side door and tried it. Locked, just as she'd left it. The other door was locked, too, with no signs that someone had tried to get in. She unlocked the door, climbed inside, and radioed the incident to the local authorities. Then she called the Shiprock substation. The rookie answered the phone, sounding half asleep, but she gave him her location, told him about the theft and the damage to the unit, and said she'd send photos. The perpetrator had broken the latch. She shone her flashlight carefully around the interior of the trunk. Nothing except the pot had been taken. Then she asked about the roads.
"It's bad out there. No fatals, but 3 multi-vehicle accidents, one involving a truck hauling cattle. Messy. The state police and the highway department are looking at a long, cold night."
Bernie took pictures of the tire tracks of the vehicle that had parked next to where her patrol unit had slipped off the road, and of the footprints that led from the road to her unit's back bumper and up to the street again. She removed the binder, found wire in the trunk, and fastened the lid well enough to get her back to Shiprock. Doing something took the edge off her anger and the feeling of violation. The burglary puzzled her. She knew it wasn't random. Why break into the locked trunk of a police car during a blizzard? Someone knew about the box Hoffman had given her. That person also knew her location and wanted the pot badly enough to brave the storm. She could think of only three people who fit that description. Merrily, the intended recipient, who'd been in the house with Franklin at the time of the theft, Hoffman himself, who was probably still hospitalized, and Officer Manzanares, who had asked about the box and told her it was filled with drugs. Bernie remembered where she'd heard the bird call before. On Merrily's phone, during her first visit when the ringtone interrupted their interview. Merrily had disappeared into the back of the house a short while later, allegedly for an aspirin, and then Bernie had overheard one side of a heated conversation. And this time, after she heard the bird call, someone had shown up to break into her unit. It was past time for a talk. She grabbed Franklin's shirt, charged back to the porch, stomped the snow off her boots, and opened the door to Merrily's house. 21. A wave of warm air with a hint of chocolate greeted Bernie, her hostess and suspect, seated at the kitchen counter with a mug in her hands, looked up.
"What were you doing outside? It's really cold out there."
"Someone broke into my unit." Bernie watched for Merrily's reaction, noted her lack of surprise, and continued. "I went out to get the pot and Franklin's shirt, and the trunk was wide open."
"Wow, are you sure you didn't leave it that way? You looked really tired when you came in."
"I'm sure."
"That's awful."
Merrily put her mug on the counter.
"Is anything missing?"
"Yes, the box Hoffman asked me to bring you."
"Oh dear. Did the break-in do much damage to the car?"
"Some. I took photos."
"I imagine this weather has all the police out dealing with accidents tonight anyway. An auto burglary probably wouldn't have priority."
Merrily picked up the mug and moved it toward her lips. Bernie spread the damp shirt over the seat of a kitchen stool. "This might get more attention than you think. One of the state police officers, a man you know, might be involved."
"Manzanares, right?"
Bernie sat down at the counter next to her.
"Right. I was puzzled when you asked if he was at the accident site when Hoffman had me call you. When I said no, you hung up on me. Shortly after that, he arrived."
"Oh, did I? Sorry, I was so worried about Larry. I didn't mean..."
Bernie gave her the shut-up-now look she had cultivated for drunks who tried to flirt their way out of getting arrested. Merrily stopped talking and sat up a bit straighter.
"Manzanares hates me. He thinks I killed his cousin, my ex, you know. He thinks I killed Roger myself or had him killed and got away with it. He hounds me, torments me. He's awful."
"Have you reported him?"
She shook her head.
"He's careful about all this, and law enforcement is a closed circle, a boys' club, you know that. And I'm a triple outsider, a woman, a Navajo, and I didn't grow up here."
"Well, he messed up this time. I have pictures of his footprints and the tire tracks, and you'll vouch that the box was in my trunk."
Merrily shook her head.
"I'm sure you had it if you say you did, but I never saw it. I can't swear to that."
"You're afraid of him. So scared you can't tell the truth."
Merrily stared at the countertop for several long minutes. When she looked up, Bernie saw her tears.
"How about some more coffee? I've got decaf."
She opened the drawer and pulled out a couple of pods. Merrily slipped a pod into the machine but didn't turn it on.
"Why would Manzanares think you'd kill his cousin?"
"You'll have to ask him. Ask him why I'd go to all the trouble of hiring a lawyer and starting divorce proceedings against Roger if I were going to kill the scumbag."
"I heard he wanted to divorce you."
"Toward the end, our animosity was mutual and far-reaching. But Roger wasn't murdered. He drowned in a boating accident at Navajo Lake. Manzanares knew our marriage was rocky. He even asked me out, but I told him no. After that, he had it in for me.
He was part of the investigation, and the drowning gave him a reason to get back at me, especially when I didn't want an autopsy.
You know that decision made you look suspicious.
I knew. I didn't care. Merrily's voice flared with anger. Even though we were ending our marriage, I didn't want his body violated. Would you? But they did it anyway. They told me they found alcohol and also something they called unknown substances in his body. I'm sure those were herbs we were taking for allergies. I used dried leaves from the Brugs to make a little weak tea for both of us. No, I didn't kill my husband, but I wasn't sorry when he died. Merrily stood and walked with her cup to the sink. I have to work in the morning, assuming the roads are open so my clients can get here to talk about their problems. I need to go to bed. Let me show you where you can sleep.
I don't plan on spending the night. I'll just stay until the tow truck comes.
Merrily shrugged. Suit yourself, then.
I've got a couple more questions. Manzanares thought the box might be full of drugs. Was it?
How would I know? Merrily put both hands on the counter and leaned toward Bernie. I think you're right about Manzanares being behind this. I can picture him driving over here to steal my pot out of sheer meanness.
How did he know I'd be here?
Maybe he's stalking me, saw your car, and went crazy.
Maybe he called you when you had the music up loud and I was on the phone with my husband.
Merrily stared at her hands. Don't be ridiculous.
Why did Larry Hoffman have your pot?
Merrily looked up. Things have been tight financially for me ever since Roger died. I left it on consignment, hoping some tourist might come into the monument shop and be interested.
How did you get that pot?
Roger gave it to me as a wedding present.
Did he say where it came from?
Not exactly. He said he bought it from a collector.
Did he tell you who?
Bernie thought she knew the answer. No, I didn't ask.
But you think he got it from Manzanares, and that Manzanares acquired it illegally, and now he's stolen it to cover his tracks.
Merrily nodded. It wouldn't surprise me. Roger was handsome as a fat coyote, and as deceitful, too. After he died, Manzanares asked me to give the pot to him as a reminder of Roger. Enough for tonight.
Not quite. One more question. Why did you help him steal it?
Merrily shook her head. I think the long day has affected your thinking. I can't stand that man.
But you called him to tell him I was here.
Merrily opened both hands, extended her fingers as if she were giving up.
What kind of a pot is it?
It was an old seed pot from a Coma Pueblo, with cross-hatching and a parrot design. Bernie knew the type. They had a tiny opening in the top to keep the start of the New Year's crop stored safe from mice and other critters. Not a practical choice for hiding drugs.
I forgot to ask, how was Larry?
Larry? Bernie made a mental note of the stumble. Oh, you mean in the hospital? Merrily ran her index finger across her jawline. I didn't get to talk to him. He was sleeping. I'm going to bed now, too. I'll answer your questions in the morning. Based on the weather, none of us are leaving anytime soon. After watching Merrily disappear down the hall, Bernie extracted her cell phone, called the tow company again, and got a recording. She took her phone charger from her backpack and plugged it into an outlet in the living room, near a chair from which she could see both the front door and the hallway that led to Merrily's bedroom. The bing of an incoming email reminded her of Leaphorn's promise to do some investigation into the Cruz family. She'd see if he'd sent something. She hadn't checked all day. While she was at it, she'd look at the highway conditions and the weather forecast for the morning. Leaphorn's messages added to her wakefulness. They had come in when she was looking at the old bones, and both had the subject line, Merrily Cruz. The first one had two attachments, tricky to open on her phone, so she looked at the second message first. Just as he always did face to face, the lieutenant got right to the point.
Here's what you need to know. 1. Merrily's husband, Roger Bateson, an experienced boater, died at Navajo Lake under suspicious circumstances. The widow, who was not at the scene and reported him missing, tried to block an autopsy on Navajo cultural grounds. Because the man was non-Navajo, her request was denied. 2. The autopsy found some anomalies, as you can read in the attachment.